to the TPL Show, a podcast dedicated to the study and discussion of leadership. Join us as we share relevant, simple, and lasting methods for improvement that can be used to lead from any level in any organization.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to today's episode of the TPL Show. Today, we're going to be kicking off a five-part series that will wrap up season one of the TPL Show. Can you believe that?
I can't.
A full season is about to be finished.
I can't believe we've done a whole season.
It's almost
season.
A full year since we've started this podcast.
It's been a never-ending work of love.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
Today's episode, we're going to be kicking off a five-part series, and that series is called Leading with Lean. So part one is called What is Lean Really?
I'm really excited about this one.
Yeah, me too. So let me do just a brief introduction about this series, okay? Lean manufacturing is a widely known but poorly understood philosophy that is often unwisely reduced to a series of tools and a cookie-cutter approach to producing a product or a service. In our five-part series, Leading with Lean, Dave and I will walk you through the underlying philosophy of Lean, the foundational concepts that Lean is built upon, and the basics of how to employ Lean methods in ways that would help you to better think, plan, and lead.
Fantastic.
So, we're going to follow our standard what, why, how format.
Mm-hmm.
But before we jump into the what, I want to go back a little bit and talk about some of the origins of lean manufacturing. Where did lean come from? Right?
Yeah. Yeah. So this, I think this is important for people to know. It gives them the foundation that they can use to do further study and so forth. So the roots of lean show up in the writings of Ben Franklin. In his book, Poor Richard's Almanac, he writes about the reduction of waste. And specifically, he writes this, avoiding unnecessary costs could provide more profit than increasing sales. So this is probably the first time someone says this out loud,
right,
or thinks about this in a very concrete way. If you paid attention to the costs of your process, you could save enough that it would significantly increase your success. And so Ben Franklin is writing this, you know, 2.5 centuries ago, approaching, you know, getting close to 3 centuries ago. And just as an aside, he was a genius. And anyone who wants to be a leader should read everything Ben Franklin ever wrote.
Right.
Right. But this in particular, this from the Poor Richard's Almanac, really is one of the earliest sources of this concept that evolves into lean. His thoughts get further developed by Frederick Taylor, more officially Frederick Winslow Taylor. In 1911, Taylor wrote a book, Principles of Scientific Management, and he outlined and named the process of proto-lean back at that time, calling it scientific management.
Okay.
So he took this idea of the scientific method and applied it to managing a business. So that's kind of taking what Ben Franklin said and really kind of upcharging it and leveraging it forward, right? And he wrote, whenever a workman proposes an improvement, it should be the policy of the management to make a careful analysis of the new method and, if necessary, conduct a series of experiments to determine accurately the relative merit of the new suggestion and of the old standard. And whenever the new method is found to be markedly superior to the old, it should be adopted as the standard for the whole establishment. Wow, this is revolutionary thinking for the time. The idea that a regular person from the manufacturing line or out there working on the construction site because Taylor did a lot of work with construction stuff, could have an idea that could be vetted, and if it turned out to be on its merits a superior idea, we should simply employ it. That is, for the time, absolutely revolutionary, and it carries this idea of improvement forward. And so people, you know, historians and so forth that write about this, they call that the first sign of proto-lean, right? So that takes us up to the beginning of the 20th century. Why don't you take this story for a while?
At the beginning of the 20th century, Shigeo Shingo read Taylor's book, and he dedicated his life to the furtherance of scientific management. So he and Kichiro Toyoda refined Taylor's philosophies in the textile and automotive industries.
Mm-hmm.
And as time went on, the great engineer Taichi Ono, he brought these methods together to form the philosophy known as the Toyota Production System,
yeah,
or TPS,
absolutely,
as we know it today, right?
Sure.
So fast forward to 1988, we see the first term lean in John Krafcik's article, The Triumph of the Lean Production System.
Yeah.
And so after that, we next see the term lean manufacturing finally surface as the philosophy of lean is detailed further by James Womack, Daniel Jones, and Daniel Roos in the 1990 book, The Machine That Changed the World.
The Machine That Changed the World. That's a must read.
Very important read,
mm-hmm,
in the understanding of lean manufacturing.
Yeah.
So Womack and Jones, they continue to clarify the lean philosophy in their 1996 book, Lean Thinking, Banish Waste, and Create Wealth in Your Corporation.
Mm-hmm.
So in that book, they laid out five key principles. These are precisely specify value by specific product, identify the value stream for each product, make value flow without interruptions, let the customer pull value from the producer, and pursue perfection.
Yeah.
From that time on, lean manufacturing was a mature business philosophy.
Yeah. So we see that it evolved over a long period of time.
Yeah.
Each generation of thinker building upon the thoughts of the last, refining it, and ultimately we see it becomes this mature philosophy that people can tap into to make things better in their business for their customer.
Right.
Okay, cool. So,
yeah, it's a little bit about the origin,
yeah,
of lean manufacturing.
Yeah, and I think it's important to know because you can go back and read all of these foundational thoughts, and they're very powerful and they're very raw, and they're very useful to you understanding where we are today, why we are there, and also how you can springboard off of it. Because sometimes when you learn these foundational thoughts, it opens up your mind to conceive of methods and approaches that you might not otherwise have had come in front of you. So I think it's worthwhile knowing it, right? And you can certainly follow up on those sources and many others and read about this. So let's turn our attention to what lean is.
Yes, do it.
So let's start by saying that lean means many different things to many people. I like to think of it as an English paper. If you wrote a paper for an English class and you gave it to 100 English teachers, you'd get 100 different grades back.
Yeah, right.
But we all think, well, there's English and there's the right and wrong of English, right, and there's a standard to it and so forth. Yet the fact is that each English teacher has their own cut on the English, right, language, right, and grammar, right, and punctuation, yep, and so forth. So the same is true with lean. There are just many, many versions of systems aimed at bringing about improvement that people call lean. It has its purists, its revisionists, its visionaries, and its charlatans.
Yeah.
There are people out there claiming to know about lean that really don't know much about it at all, and they're kind of faking it, right? So all that's in the mix. We have to make sure that we understand that. But it's important to think about lean as a general school of thought rather than a specific discipline. Yeah. So for instance, if you were going to a university, inside the university, there are colleges. So there's maybe a college of education. And then inside that college of education, there's a specific discipline, math teacher or history teacher. And so lean is not that. It's not a specific discipline. It's more like the college level, the college of education, right, so to speak. It's a general school, and there are many variants. Since we started recording history, the desire to manufacture things has been a very human trait. Humans have always manufactured things since the very beginning. Almost no other creature makes things, and humans alone engage in mass production. So there are a few other creatures on the earth that make tools or make buildings or shelters. But this idea of mass production of products and, of course, later services, right, that's a very, very human thing. So humans have been continually improving for eons. Each generation improves upon the last. This idea, this pursuit of improvement is really built into us. It's in the very fiber of our being. We're constantly trying to make life better for our children, for ourselves, for our grandchildren, for our customer, and so on. We're constantly trying to improve. So we want to keep all that in mind, this idea of a general school of thought, many variants, and the fact that improving is a very, or at least the attempt to improve, right, is a very, very human trait.
Right? I would say there's different levels of that. You know, with depending on who you talk to, there's a different level of the desire to improve. So yeah, in some people, that desire is probably pretty strong.
Yeah.
And then, you know, like you or I, or people that work in, you know, manufacturing or mm-hmm. something like that. But there are other people, they probably still have that desire, but it's, you know, it could be minimal.
Of course.
But it's still there. Like, as you said, it's built into us.
Yeah.
It's in our DNA, right?
Yeah. If you look at us, not necessarily as individuals, but as a group, as a species,
right,
as a total population, improvement is really a big part of, right, a part of us. So of course, there are individuals who may not be interested or who are somewhat less interested. Sure. That's true for sure. So we see this in the literature, as we talked about. And over time, this idea of lean or lean management starts to surface. And as we had mentioned, this term was first defined by Womack and Jones in their book, Lean Thinking, Banish Waste and Create Wealth in Your Corporation, which came out in about 1996. And they defined lean in this way. It's a way to do more and more with less and less. Less human effort, less equipment, less time, and less space, while coming closer and closer to providing customers exactly what they want. So I just want to say that one more time.
Yeah, that's great.
This is a philosophy, yeah, and it's not a religion.
Sure.
It's not a discipline per se, right? So they define lean as a way to do more and more with less and less, less human effort, less equipment, less time, and less space, while coming closer and closer to providing customers exactly what they want. Wow. I think this is a fabulous way to talk about what lean is. So at Avanulo, we subscribe to that definition, and we believe that lean is a business philosophy that calls for process owners to relentlessly pursue the reduction of variation for the benefit of the customer, which is what we believe that Womack and Jones were saying.
We're talking about, yeah.
Right? We also believe that people will naturally seek to improve their environment, work processes, and lives, whether or not there's a formal system to help them do so. This is something that's just built into us. So we think that lean, or often it's called lean manufacturing, is a school of thought and some tools that help us to improve the way we improve. In other words, lean is a meta improvement system. It's helping us to improve the way we improve. And another thing I think it's important to say is we at Avenue Low believe that lean manufacturing is mostly tactical, local, and very human. It's not a generic strategy, the way Porter, for instance, talks about generic strategy for business, but it's an augmentation to an organization's generic strategy. So that's important to note. Many people think of it as this kind of all-encompassing thing for a business, and really it's a tactical solution that fits hand in glove with many other things going on in a business or organization,
for sure.
So that's what it is.
Yeah. All right. So let's briefly cover the why, and then we can get into the how.
Okay.
So why is lean an important part of a leader's toolbox?
And we're going to do the three types of whys.
Three reasons. So rational, emotional, and tangible.
Okay.
So let me hit the first one, which is rational. So lean provides an educational base. So it's an integrated set of methods and a vetted set of tools for operating processes in a way that keeps everyone focused on customer-centered improvement.
Yeah.
So that's just the rational thought and the reason behind use lean in manufacturing.
This idea, the voice of the customer, sure, driving out waste for the benefit of the customer, linking that to your noble purpose.
Sure.
So lean is really, really powerful in that regard.
I think it can get tied into a organization's vision statements,
mm-hmm,
or their purpose or, mm-hmm, their values pretty seamlessly.
Like, yeah.
It usually slides right in.
Yeah. That's how I see it. Yeah. Okay. So that's the rational reason. Let's take a look at the emotional reason. The lean philosophy extends the operational reach of leaders through a series of concepts and tools and methods. It lets the leader share what they're thinking and how they're thinking, helps them to delegate and prioritize.
So this really keeps employees engaged.
Yeah.
Like it really,
yeah,
brings them into the picture, right?
Yeah. It helps leaders engage employees better,
yeah,
and more deeply. It also, and we'll see this more rather than just saying it, but we'll see it more as we get into the detail in subsequent episodes in the series. It promotes mutual respect and caring, and it keeps the customer top of mind for everybody.
I think it keeps everyone focused, like,
yeah,
everybody in the organization focused.
Yeah.
On one, usually one, should be one, goal.
Yeah, I think that's right. That's right.
Okay, let's talk about the tangible reason. So lean is 100% a competitive advantage.
Hmm.
And those who embed lean thinking in their culture are going to outperform their competition in almost every metric,
yeah,
that you can see or track.
Yeah, many people refer to lean as a journey.
Yeah.
And in a positive way, I like to think of it as a virus. Right?
It does kind of spread.
It spreads, and people apply it and, sure, reapply it, and in the applying and reapplying, become more proficient, sure, give it their own bent through their own leadership style and their own work style, and it's free.
Yeah.
It's virtually free, and it brings this competitive advantage that's unbelievable.
Right. I think in certain situations, and I've seen this before, where, you know, lean is implemented in an organization, and it's amazing to see everyone's thought processes change,
mm-hmm,
right? From leadership all the way down to, you know, production floors. You see those thoughts that people have. They'll have those thoughts anyways, but they actually come out because they know that they're going to be rewarded for saying them, or,
sure,
or they're going to be listened to because
of the respect.
It's going to be respected.
Yeah.
And they're like, wow, that's, you know, it's fantastic. Cause a lot of people will hold those thoughts in because they think, oh, they're not going to listen to me. You know, my thoughts,
right,
don't matter. My ideas don't matter.
Even kind of more toxic. It's not, they're not going to listen to me. I've tried to share those thoughts, yeah, before, and they didn't listen.
Right.
And even worse, I shared it before, and they said they would, yeah, do something, and they didn't do
nothing.
Something. And the lean process helps unravel all that and heal all that and move beyond all that.
So it's amazing to see all those thoughts come flooding in. And, and people are not afraid to say something. That's, that's the beauty of it to me, is because now they'll raise their hand. They want to be engaged. They want to be listened to. You know, they want to get their ideas out, which is, I think it's great in the long run.
So. I'm watching it right now with an implementation that we have going on where we're bringing in Lean. Classic Avanulo approach. First, management has to get right. There has to be a certain level of evenness. And then you start the routine meeting with employees and start having them be focused on the customer's needs, the voice of the customer, variation, and so forth. And there's arms crossed and people half turned away, and then they're turned toward, and then the arms become uncrossed, and then there starts to be conversation. And I'm going through all this right now, and it's so exciting to watch from the kind of skeptical, we've heard all this before phase, to the engaged phase. And, you know, we're just approaching this engagement now. And it's just really rewarding and exciting to see.
Yeah. All right. So that covers the what and the why. So before we jump into the how this is applied.
Yeah.
We're going to take a quick break.
All right.
So we'll see you guys in a few minutes.
All right. See ya.
Okay. We're back. And we're going to jump into the how. Version of this. So how do you apply Lean as an executive? So we have about 8 points to cover. So each one has different levels of detail. You know, because we want to introduce this, but we don't want to jump in too deep.
Right. We'll do that in the subsequent episodes.
Yeah. But for this introductory episode, I don't think we need to get that heavy on the end, right? So let's briefly introduce.
So we're going through the how like we always do. We did the what, the why. Now we're doing the how.
Yep.
How do you apply Lean as an executive?
Yeah, it's a little different.
However, these points can be used by anybody. So there's something that is important to note. Your range of control versus your range of concern. So what you're concerned about versus what you have control over. Can be different, right? So an executive might have a span of control that covers the entire organization, but they only have a smaller span of concern about particular parts of the organization. A supervisor may have concern about the whole organization, but may only have a small span of control over a part of the organization.
Right.
So we get that. And what we're about to talk about is focused specifically on how an executive would apply Lean and drive Lean into the organization and get the benefit from it and so on. However, these same points are useful to leaders at any level. You just might have to do it on a smaller scale
with
fewer people and, you know, adjust them according to your reality, but they're just as applicable.
Yep.
So the first one is learn about lean manufacturing from a vetted expert, from a consultant, from a lean guru, from a sensei, from a famous author, right? So definitely, there are many, many books to read, but definitely read Lean Thinking by Womack and Jones.
That's a good one.
And the Toyota Kata, Managing People for Improvement, Adaptiveness, and Superior Results, by Rother and Belker. So those two books are great books to start with, and they're pretty easy reads, although Lean Thinking is maybe somewhat lengthy, but it's still
it's good read
a good read. So do that. Learn about lean manufacturing from someone who really understands it.
Good. Okay, so number two. Make sure that your PVV, your purpose, vision, values, and your evenness hierarchy are relevant, clear, and fully animated. You can get more information about the PVV from our episode number two, and then you can get more information on evenness hierarchy listening by going back and listening to episodes 12 and 13 where we talk about those topics.
So the important thing here is you have to have a certain level of constancy of purpose and evenness in your organization yep. to bring lean in. It's very difficult to bring in lean if things are very chaotic. Employees are trying to make incremental improvement, and if the bigger process is chaotic, it keeps stomping on their incremental improvements. It'll totally turn them off.
Yeah.
They'll build a resistance to the idea of continuous improvement and specifically lean. And then when you finally get stable enough that you could gain some real benefit from the concept, your people will reject it.
Yeah.
So you have to bring about a certain level of evenness. And this is mostly psychological in nature. If people see that you are dedicated to this idea of bringing order to the chaos, even though you're not entirely successful yet, but you've earned their respect as a reliable leader in this fight, in the fight to make sure that things are orderly, that we're listening to the voice of the customer, we're driving out waste, then they'll follow you and they'll engage. But you can't start lean at the Gemba. That's a huge mistake. You go in at the Gemba and start improving things that the chaos will simply defeat. They'll simply defeat those improvements in short order in 60 days or so. And you're worse off than if you'd done nothing. So that's what this number two is all about. Make sure that this is set up successfully from the organizational top down to the Gemba, so to speak. Okay, so this idea of getting the organization set up for success is number two. Number three is pick a specific philosophy of lean and train all your senior leaders in the key concepts of that philosophy. So as we said, there are many different flavors and types.
Right.
Ultimately, you got to pick one of these philosophies and go with it, right? So in general, the closer that philosophy is to the Toyota production system, the better.
Sure.
It's vetted, it's proven, it works. Pick a noble and experienced provider. If you're going with an outside expert or an internal expert, make sure that they're experienced and that they're noble people, right? Providers like TWI Global, the Lean Enterprise Institute, or our process, Avanulo's Robust System, which is a system of lean. Whatever specific approach you select, make sure it meets these criteria, that it focuses on the voice of the customer, that its implementation follows this sequence: physical order first, which many people call 5S, procedural order second, which many people call standardized work, and optimization third, which many people call Kaizen. So this idea of starting with Kaizen or starting with procedural order makes the journey much more difficult. First, put the physicality of the place in order, then the behavioral side in order, how we do the work, and then with those two platforms in place, release your people to optimize things by demonstrating they're a better idea and then pushing them through the platform of physical order or procedural order.
Yeah, that's good.
Right? So that's really important, that the process that you would engage understands that. Mm-hmm. And is set up that way. That it's based on the scientific method, meaning the PDCA, plan, do, check, assess cycle. So the concept of following that scientific methodology and as often as possible, changing only one variable at a time, and then allowing sufficient time to see if that variable has had the change, has had the desired effect.
You're keeping things very simple at this point.
Keeping things simple, yeah. And that it includes classic Genchi Genbutsu. This Genchi Genbutsu, this idea of going to the place where the value is added, right? So the Gemba attitude, Shoshin, the beginner's mind, and Hunsai, reflection. Right from the start, we want to put in the Gemba walk, as many people call it, but the classic Gemba walk, not some watered-down version of it or this management by walking around stuff, but the classic Gemba Walk, Genchi Genbutsu, as taught in the Toyota production system, et cetera. And so, and that it has an effective, continuous education and leadership development process built in.
That's important.
You have to invest in that regard. You have to educate, because many of the concepts are counterintuitive.
Yeah.
They're counter to the way we would normally think about managing a process or improving a process. So, so it's got to have these five things. It focuses on the voice of the customer. It follows the right order of implementation. It's based on scientific method. It includes right from the get-go the Gemba Walk, Genchi Genbutsu, and it has an effective education and leadership development process.
That's good.
Right?
Yeah.
So that's the number three, is picking a specific philosophy.
Good. All right. So after picking a specific philosophy, number four, you're going to commission a group of leaders who understand lean concepts very well, and you're going to have them develop your organization's version of lean, right? So specific to your organization. And you're going to make sure that what they develop is aligned with your organization's PVV and its evenness hierarchy that we mentioned before.
Yeah. Yeah, this is important. So you're taking that philosophy and you have to customize it a bit. So you're not wrapping your process around that philosophy, but you're wrapping that philosophy
right
around your process.
So you're taking the general idea and you're focusing it to your specific organizational PVV.
Yeah, critically important. You want to make sure that this approach, this lean approach, in its specifics now,
right,
supports your purpose, vision, and values, your PVV, and your evenness hierarchy.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Really important.
All right. So what's number five?
Sure. Number five, with your cadre of senior leaders, you have to learn how to make a classic Gemba Walk and implement Gemba Walks in your organization.
Hmm. Well, didn't we talk about that before?
We did. We talked about it as a criteria for selection up above, that whatever that process you're going to go with includes this. And now what we're saying here is, do this. You have to do this. We cannot emphasize enough this idea of making a classic Gemba Walk. And we're very proud of our process.
Yeah.
It's the classic approach to Gemba Walk. Go there and see, ask why, and show respect. Yeah. And we define respect and how you animate respect in the workplace and so forth in a very classic sense. It's very effective. We are honored to teach anyone this process. But wherever you learn it from, you must learn it. It's the single most important leadership skill available to you in your organization. So we're mentioning it here as a key part of your implementation. Up above, we're saying whatever group you go with or school of thought you go with, if they're not including this, they're flawed, right? And here we're saying, make sure that you put this in early on in the process and you use the learnings from it to further implement your process, drive towards the voice of the customer, and so on.
So important we mention it twice.
So important we mention it twice.
All right, so number six would be to educate leadership cadre in lean principles.
Yeah.
Pretty simple.
Just educate your leadership team in these lean principles. And this is ongoing and all the time. Not one and done. Not one and done. Do this over and over and over again. And with people that are newly arrived, people that are promoted, people that are transferred, and just everybody over and over again.
So number seven.
Yeah. So begin to implement the macro steps of lean in order with the five principles of lean in mind, right? So these steps are the physical order, 5S, which in Avanulo, by the way, we call zoning. Then the procedural order, which we call standardized work. And then optimization, which we call Kaizen. This is just like you say, hey, we're seeing this twice. Yep, up above is the selection criteria, right? The organization that you go with, if they don't understand this, don't go with them, right? This is the way that you put this in. So that's to now begin. You've got Gemba Walks in place. Your senior leaders are educated. You've selected a group, so forth and so on. And now you're starting at number seven, all that 1 through 6 is getting ready. Number 7, now we're starting, and we're starting by putting the physical world in order.
And last but not least, what's number 8?
Conduct Hansai. Hansai self-reflection. So we start as leaders reflecting, and we are simply asking, in this most recent implementation, this interaction I had today, this project that I just completed, whatever it might be,
right,
what went right, what went wrong, and so forth, what could I do better? And then commit to action to prevent recurrence of that which is bad, and to leverage the benefit of that which is good. Eventually, getting to the place of personal development where you can make that Hansai commitment publicly. Yeah. And then eventually moving your team towards Hansai so that the team can sit in a circle, so to speak, and openly talk about what didn't go well without hurt feelings and without thin skin, and then publicly make commitments to prevent recurrence. This is Hansai. We start with self as a leader, and we grow this to our team. And a very simple way to do this is to use the after-action review that came out of the United States military. We get into a period of Hansai, and we ask 3 simple questions. What was supposed to happen? What actually happened? What do you want to do about it?
Right.
And it's a nice, emotionally neutral way to conduct Hansai. So we keep doing this at every step along the way.
Constantly reflect.
We're reflecting.
Constantly, you know, review what we've done and focus to improve upon it next time.
Yes.
Love it. Okay, so that pretty much wraps up this first episode, part 1 of What is Lean Really?
So obviously we'll go into more detail in the successive episodes for this, for the how-tos.
Sure. And we'll, and just a quick note, so in the show notes for this episode, even though we kind of went through the how to apply these concepts as an executive, we'll also include in the notes kind of the supervisor level.
Mm-hmm.
About, we'll include some things to...
From that perspective.
Yeah, from the supervisor's perspective.
Sure. I mean, we went over that kind of briefly, but that we've got a little bit more we can share.
We'll add
if you're a supervisor and you're trying to implement some lean concepts, or you're trying to support a lean implementation.
Yeah, there's just a few small differences.
Sure. Yeah. By the way, while we're on the topic of notes, in the show notes, you'll see a section on key tools. And one of those tools is an article by Charles Intereri. I hope I'm pronouncing his last name correctly.
Good luck
with
that.
But Charles wrote a fantastic article 5 or 6 years ago called The 14 Principles of the Lean Toyota Production System. And it's a really quick and easy read and really makes TPS clear for people who are not very familiar with it. So it's in the notes with a link to that article. I suggest you click on that and check it out.
Yeah. Okay. As always, thanks for listening today. If you like this podcast, please subscribe and leave us a review. We would appreciate any feedback that you're willing to give us. If you have any questions or just like to share any experiences that you've had, just send us an email at info@tplshow.org. And we will see you next time on the TPL Show.
So long.
Thank you for listening to the TPL Show. We hope you'll apply what you learned today and tell us how it went. If you want to share, want more information, or have questions, please contact us at info@tplshow.org. Have a great day.